Today's scripture passage comes to us from the New Testament, first from the book of Hebrews. Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. And then from Matthew's gospel. For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you took care of me. I was in prison and you visited me. Well, today we're continuing in our Advent series entitled Christmas at the Movies. And each week what we're doing is we're looking at a classic Christmas movie. Movies that are favorites of mine, but also favorites of a lot of people. But they also, I believe, point us to the deeper and the broader meaning of Christmas. And so last week we began with It's a Wonderful Life. So if you haven't seen it, please, please do. You can catch last week's sermon online as well. This week we want to turn our attention to the 1947 classic Miracle on 34th Street. Now, this was a movie that was nominated for a Best Picture Oscar. It didn't win, but it was nominated. It's listed as, I believe I read this week, the ninth most inspirational film of all time. So it's a really good movie. And I believe it helps us discover or rediscover the joy of faith. And it does so by pointing us to Kris Kringle or Santa Claus. And yet what we're going to find is that Kris Kringle or Santa Claus points us to someone else. Now, the movie actually begins with the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade in 1947. Now, that parade's still going on today. I watched it just, a week ago over Thanksgiving. Maybe you did as well, but it's still going on. But this is the kind of the setting of the beginning of the movie here. And there's a woman by the name of Doris Walker. Now, she is the person who is in charge of the Macy's Parade. And she notices that the Santa Claus that she has hired to be in the parade has shown up drunk. And so desperate, she is trying to find a new Santa, and she turns and she finds standing nearby a gentleman by the name of Kris Kringle. And she hires him on the spot, right there on the spot, to be the Santa in the Macy's Day Parade. And not only that, she hires him to be the Santa for the 34th Street Macy's department store. All right? And I want to begin with a scene, though, when Doris is talking to Fred Gailey. Now, Fred Gailey is an attorney who lives in the same apartment building that Doris does, and he's sweet on Doris. And Doris's daughter, Susan, played by the young Natalie Wood, she's watching the parade from Fred's window there. And as she's doing that, Fred and Doris begin to have a conversation. And it's during this conversation, though, that Fred learns that Fred quickly learns what Doris thinks about Santa and really about anything mystical. Take a look.
There goes Santa Claus.
Oh, don't even mention the name.
He's much better than last year's. At least this one doesn't wear glasses.
This one was a last-minute substitute. The one I hired, I fired.
Why?
You remember the way the janitor was last New Year's?
Oh, yes.
Well, this one was much worse.
Oh. I see she doesn't believe in Santa Claus either. No Santa Claus, no fairy tales, no fantasies of any kind. Is that it?
That's right. I think we should be realistic and completely truthful with our children and not have them growing up believing in a lot of legends and myths like Santa Claus, for example.
I see.
In essence, Doris is saying, you know what? I choose to see the world through the eyes of my intellect. I believe in common sense. I believe in what's logical, what's rational, what is real. And so Doris represents a way that many people see the world. You know what? I'm only going to believe in the things that can be proven. That can be proven scientifically, that can be demonstrated as true, that are logically deductible. Aside from that, I'm going to be skeptical about a lot of things. Now, we call this understanding epistemology. Episteme is a Greek word meaning knowledge. Logos means word or the study of. And so epistemology is the study of how we distinguish between what is true and what is simply opinion. And so Doris obviously represents one side of that, okay? The rational, the scientifically provable, the logical side of that. Fred Gailey in the film, this attorney who was a very logical person, but he also has this understanding that truth, all right, is more than what you can logically deduce. It's more than what you can see or touch or feel. There's a deeper level of truth. And Fred, you know, it's like it's in the heart, Fred points to. And this is the most important truth of all. And so Fred represents the opposite side of this, this other way of knowing truth, recognizing that there is more than we can possibly comprehend with our 3-pound brain that is in our heads, okay? And so the movie sets up this epistemological question of how do we know what's true? How do we distinguish it? How do we discern that? Is it only what you can scientifically prove or logically deduce or understand? Or is there a deeper truth that can always be proven, all right? And it's a question that can be applied to the Christmas story as well when you really think about it. I mean, if you come to the Christmas story solely from a logical, scientific, verifiable, rationalistic point of view, you're going to think that the story is absurd. I mean, think about that. I mean, a virgin conceives a child. That right there is ridiculous. Okay, and then on top of that, the child that is born is God in the flesh. The child that is born in Bethlehem is God in the flesh. How is that possible that God could even do that? Or how are we even to understand that? What does this mean? Because logically, it doesn't make sense, does it? But if you come to understand that there is a deeper truth, all right, if you come to recognize that there is more than you can just see and feel and touch to the universe that surrounds us, then you begin to see the power of Christmas. And you begin to understand that there is a God who has come to us in Christ born in Bethlehem, who shows us the way, the truth, and the life, who has declared by his life, death, and resurrection that there is always hope. See, it's then that you discover the real meaning and the power of Christmas. Now see, Dora, she struggles with anything that's not logical. Fred, on the other hand, reminds us that there is truth. All right? There is a deeper level of truth that is beyond what is logical or what you can prove scientifically. And that brings us to Kris Kringle. So in this next scene I want to share with you, Doris has just hired Chris to be the Santa Claus for the 34th Street Macy's department store. Now, before he begins, the toy department supervisor comes to Chris and he gives him some tips on how to be a good Santa. Take a look.
Hey. There you are.
Oh, morning.
Now what a striking costume. Before you go up on the floor, I just want to give you a few tips on how to be a good Santa Claus.
Go right ahead.
Well, here's a list of toys that we have to push, you know, things that we're overstocked on. Now, you'll find that a great many children will be undecided as to what they want for Christmas. When that happens, you immediately suggest one of these items. You understand?
I certainly do.
Good. Now, you memorize that list and I'll... I'll tell you. When you've finished, come up to the 7th floor. I'll be waiting for you.
Imagine. Making a child take something it doesn't want just because he bought too many of the wrong toys. That's what I've been fighting against for years, the way they commercialize Christmas.
Yeah, there's a lot of bad isms floating around this world, but one of the worst is commercialism. Make a buck. Even in Brooklyn, it's the same. Don't care what Christmas stands for. Just make a buck. Oh, don't bother. I'll put it away for you.
Huh? Oh, thank you, Alfred. And what should I do with these?
Throw them on a floor. I get kind of tired just sweeping up dust. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you, Alfred.
Can you identify with Chris's frustration? With the frustration of the commercialization of Christmas, I mean, we still have it today, I believe, right? But you know what? Chris is bound and determined, though, to do something different, all right? And to do something about that, because he's going to be a different kind of Santa Claus. And so if you remember, you know, the toy department supervisor has come to him and said, hey, you need to push the toys that we have overbought. Okay? All right? This is what you need to do. But Chris doesn't do that, does he? All right? In fact, he tells parents where they can find it cheaper. Or if Macy doesn't have a particular toy, he tells them where they can find that. And in this case, they can find it in their Macy's competitor store, Gimbel's. Now, the toy manager, the supervisor, hears this, and he almost has a heart attack. I mean, what are you doing recommending that that our customers go to another store? You don't do that. But see, what Macy discovers is that when you put the needs of others first, put the needs of the customers first, they actually like you better. And they become loyal customers. And suddenly, you know, suddenly, as we see in the film, customers are saying, because you were willing to send us to another store, I'm going to come back to Macy's as often as possible because you put our needs before others. This is what Chris is promoting. This is what Chris is emphasizing and encouraging. And when you take a step back from that, sounds a lot like what Jesus said, doesn't it? Right? Jesus said the first will be last and last will be first. If you want to be great, then you be a what? You be a servant. You put the needs of others first. The Apostle Paul said we are to consider the needs of others before our own. And that's exactly what Chris Kringle exemplifies. He's pointing, what's he doing? He's pointing us to this deeper meaning of Christmas, isn't he? And in the process of doing that, he opens the heart of people. In fact, he even changes Mr. Macy's heart, all right? Because he goes and then changes the policy of the whole store to put customers first. He says, we'll even recommend people to go to other stores if need be. And that even impacts their competitor, Gimbel's. They get in on the action as well, and they start recommending people to go back to Macy's. And all of a sudden, the retail, the center of commercialism of Christmas, is transformed there in New York City. Why? Because Kris Kringle is pointing them back towards, again, this deeper meaning of Christmas. And it's a great storyline in the film. But the thing is, when you start doing things like that, some people are going to think that you're crazy, especially if you say you're Santa Claus. And so when Doris discovers that Chris really believes that he's Santa, she becomes worried that he is mentally unstable. And so she takes him to see Dr. Sawyer, the store Macy's psychologist, to have him examined and evaluated. Take a look.
How many days in the week?
Definitely.
Who was the first president of the United States?
George Washington.
How much? 3 times 5?
Oh, you asked me that before. You'll find the answer right there at the bottom of the...
I am conducting this examination. How much is 3 times 5?
Well, the same as it was before. 15. You're rather nervous, aren't you, Mr. Sawyer? Do you get enough sleep?
My personal habits are of no concern to you.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's just that I hate to see someone tied up in...
How many fingers do you see?
3. Oh, you bite your nails, too.
Now, I want you to stand with your feet together and your arms extended. Then I want you to...
Muscular coordination test?
Surely. Be glad to.
You know, sometimes the cause of nervous habits like yours is not obvious.
No.
Often they're the result of an insecurity. Are you happy at home, Mr. Sawyer?
That will be all, Mr. Kringle. The examination's over. You may go.
Thank you.
You may go out that way. And it may interest you to know that I've been happily married for 26 years.
Really? Delighted to hear it. Goodbye.
Now, what does Chris do? He turns the table on the examiner, doesn't he? On that psychologist? He diagnoses the psychologist, and this threatens the psychologist, and he becomes determined to get Chris committed to a mental institution, to get him locked up. And of course, the rest of the movie is really about whether Chris is mentally stable or not. Now, let me ask you, does this remind you of another story related to Christmas? Think about it. When Jesus came, what did he do? He diagnosed the sins of the religious leaders, of the Sadducees and of the Pharisees. And so what did they do? Well, they said that Jesus had a demon inside of him, which is another way, just a first century talk for what many of us consider today mental illness. And so when Jesus continued to diagnose their sins and their illnesses, they became even more determined to put him on trial. The only difference is that instead of sentencing Jesus to be locked up in a mental institution, they sentenced him, or got the Romans to do it. They sentenced Jesus to be crucified. But do you see, there's some parallels here between the film and the gospel story as we see what happens to Kris Kringle. Now, Kris ends up in a psychiatric ward. It's Bellevue Hospital there in New York City. And while he's there, though, Fred Gailey, he decides to represent Kris and to take on Kris's case and to prove that Kris Kringle is who he says he is, that he is indeed Santa Claus. And this leads to a direct conflict between Doris and Fred. Doris the rationalist and Fred the romantic. Now, they're in a serious relationship now. I mean, they're planning their future together. But here you see this conflict come. In this next scene, you see this conflict here. And it's one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie, because it points to, again, this rationalistic side understanding of the world and those who are willing to recognize another form of knowledge and truth. Take a look.
Hello.
Sorry I'm late. Get your coat. I reserved a regular table at Luigi's. We're going to celebrate.
What are we celebrating?
Read all about it. Danny throws bombshell in New York Supreme Court.
Yes, I read that.
Oh, I didn't see this. Front page. Good, good.
You're not serious about this.
Of course I am.
But you can't possibly prove that he's Santa Claus.
Why not? You saw Macy and Gimble shaking hands. That wasn't possible either, but it happened.
Honestly,
it's Fred. It's the best defense I can use. Completely logical and completely unexpected.
And completely idiotic. What about your bosses, Hayslip and McKenzie and the rest of them? What do they say?
That I am jeopardizing the prestige and dignity of an old established law firm. And either I drop this impossible case immediately, or they will drop me.
See?
I beat them to it. I quit.
Fred, you didn't.
Of course I did. I can't let Kris down. He needs me, and all the rest of us need him.
Look, darling, he's a nice old man, and I admire you for wanting to help him. But you've got to be realistic and face facts. You can't just throw your career away because of a sentimental whim.
But I am not throwing my career away.
But if Hayslip feels that way, so will every other law firm in town.
I'm sure they will. Then I'll open my own office.
And what kind of cases will you get?
Oh, probably a lot of people like Kris that are being pushed around. That's the only fun in law anyway. And I promise you, if you believe in me and have faith in me, everything will... You don't have any faith in me, do you?
It's not a question of faith, it's just common sense.
Faith is believing in things when common sense tells you not to. Oh. Don't you see, it's not just Kris that's on trial, it's everything he stands for. It's kindness,
Fred.
And joy and love and all the other intangibles.
Oh, Fred, you're talking like a child. You're living in a realistic world, and those lovely intangibles of yours are attractive but not worth very much. You don't get ahead that way.
That all depends on what you call getting ahead. Evidently, you and I have different definitions.
These last few days, we've talked about some wonderful plans. And then you go on an idealistic binge. You give up your job, you throw away all your security, and then you expect me to be happy about it.
Yes, I guess I expected too much. Look, Doris, someday you're going to find out that your way of facing this realistic world just doesn't work. And when you do, don't overlook those lovely intangibles. You'll discover they're the only things that are worthwhile.
Did you see, did you hear the conflict about what is truth or how we see it? Because Fred, ultimately, he says, you know, he talks about intangibles. The intangibles Fred's are talking about are very simply love, joy, peace, and hope. You know, and those things you can't rationally make sense of. You can't always scientifically prove. And that's what Fred is pointing to, that there is a deeper understanding. There is a deeper truth. And for us as people of faith, that truth is a God who created the cosmos, who calls us by name, who came to walk among us through a babe born in Bethlehem, who shows us the way, the truth, and the life by his teachings, by his death, by his resurrection, who saves us from ourselves, who redeems us, who heals us, who offers us hope, who proclaims that I am with you always. I will never leave you or forsake you. And because of that, no matter how dark our circumstances might be, believing and trusting that he walks with us, that he is with us, that he redeems suffering and evil, that the worst thing is never the last thing, gives us hope. That's the deeper truth of Christmas, isn't it? Did you catch the line that Fred said? He said, "Faith is believing in things when common sense tells you not to." Sounds a lot like Hebrews 11 we heard earlier. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. Fred has faith. Doris is struggling. Now, the climax of the movie takes place in the New York State Supreme Court, where the state Supreme Court justice is, he's got a rule whether or not Chris is mentally stable or he's not. Does he need to be institutionalized or will he be set free? And it's up to Fred to prove, to get him released, to prove that he is indeed Kris Kringle, that he is indeed Santa Claus. And so in the process, what does Fred do? Well, first, if you've seen the film, it's a lot of humor in this film, and I really love it. He invites the district attorney, the prosecuting attorney's son, to the stand there. And his son testifies, the DA's son testifies, that his dad, the DA, taught him that there is a Santa Claus and that Kris Kringle is the Santa Claus. And then Fred brings up R.H. Macy. And he comes forward and he gives testimony that Kris Kringle is indeed Santa Claus. But that's not enough for the court. They need something tangible. They need something concrete, authoritative. And so what you see in this next scene is the proof that Fred presents that answers the question of who is Kris Kringle. Take a look.
The defense has yet to offer one concrete piece of evidence to substantiate this preposterous claim. Not one competent, authoritative proof that this man is Santa Claus. In view of these facts, and especially since today is Christmas Eve, we're naturally all anxious to get to our homes. I ask that you sign the commitment papers without further delay.
Mr. Gailey, have you anything further to offer?
Yes, I have, Your Honor. I'd like to submit the following facts and evidence. It concerns the Post Office Department, an official agency of the United States government. The Post Office Department was created by the Second Continental Congress on July 26, 1776. The first Postmaster General was Benjamin Franklin. The Post Office Department is one of the largest business concerns in the world. Last year, under Robert Hannigan, it did a gross business of $1,112,877,174.
Your Honor, I'm sure we're all gratified to know that the Post Office Department is doing so nicely, but it hardly has any bearing on this case.
It has a great deal, Your Honor, if I may be allowed to proceed.
By all means, Mr. Gailey.
Your Honor, the figures I have just quoted indicate an efficiently run organization. Furthermore, the United States postal laws and regulations make it a criminal offense to willfully misdirect mail or intentionally deliver it to the wrong party. Consequently, the department uses every possible precaution.
Your Honor, the state of New York is second to none in its admiration of the Post Office Department. It is efficient, authoritative, and prosperous. We are very happy to concede Mr. Gailey's claims.
For the record, Mr. Marr?
For the record. Anything to get on with this case.
Then, Your Honor, I want to introduce these pieces of evidence.
I'll take them, please.
I have here three letters. They're addressed simply Santa Claus. No other address whatsoever. Yet these letters have just now been delivered to Mr. Kringle by bona fide employees of the post office. I offer them as positive proof that a competent...
Three letters, Your Honor, are hardly positive proof. I understand the post office receives thousands of these letters every year.
I have further exhibits, Your Honor, but I hesitate to produce them.
Oh, I'm sure we'll be very happy to see them.
Yes, produce them, Mr. Gailey. Put them here on my desk.
But, Your Honor...
Put them here on the desk.
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, every one of these letters is addressed to Santa Claus. The post office has delivered them. Therefore, the Post Office Department, a branch of the federal government, recognizes this man, Kris Kringle, to be the one and only Santa Claus.
Since the United States government declares this man to be Santa Claus, this court will not dispute it. Case dismissed.
There's a lot more to this movie that I haven't shown you, and I hope you'll take a moment, take some time this Christmas season to watch it for yourself. The 1947, version of it. You can find it on Hulu or Amazon Prime or I think Disney Plus. But what did Fred prove? He said, you know what? The federal government, the U.S. Postal Service, you know, has said that Kris Kringle is Santa Claus. But for us, who is really Kris Kringle? Because Santa Claus is really a contraction of St. Nicholas, right? St. Nicholas was the 4th century Bishop of Myra, which is now Turkey. And we know the tradition, don't we? That St. Nicholas, as a boy, he was raised, you know, he grew up in an affluent home. But his parents, unfortunately, died. And so he inherited their wealth. When he became a man, he gave himself to God. And he became a priest. And he took the money that his parents had left him. And he began to use that, to distribute it to people who were in need. Now, his aim was to point people towards Christ and not to his generosity. And so what he did was, when he'd find out someone was in need or things, he would take gold coins and he would place them in a sock or a stocking, and he would toss them through the window of their home, or some say maybe even down the chimney. Why? So that he could remain anonymous in doing so, but help those that were in need. And those who, you know, received this, they didn't know who it came from, at least initially. All right, they just knew that God had blessed them and had helped them in their time of need. Now, eventually, people began to know that it was actually Nicholas that was doing this, who, you know, eventually became Bishop Nicholas, that he was the source of the gift that they had received. But what was he doing? He was simply living out his faith, wasn't he? All right, he was living out his faith. He was demonstrating to people what Jesus taught, what he taught in Matthew's gospel that we heard earlier. What did Jesus say? Hey, telling us, he said, this is what Jesus said. This is what I'm looking for in my disciples. This is what I'm looking for you. And this is because this is how you're going to be judged in the last days. When I was hungry and you gave me food, I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink, I was a stranger and you welcomed me, I was naked and you gave me clothing, I was sick and you took care of me, I was in prison and you visited me. Right? When you've done that, you've done it unto me, Jesus said. This is what you're to go and to be about, pointing others to me as you go and do these things. And this is what St. Nicholas was doing, just living out his faith and striving to point others to Christ. Just simply doing the things that Jesus commanded us to do. Now, over time, after Nicholas passed, Nicholas became a great saint in the church. That's why we call him Saint Nicholas. But by the Protestant Reformation, Martin Luther recognized that people had begun to focus on the wrong things. While Saint Nicholas was trying to point people to Christ, people now were simply focusing on Saint Nicholas himself. And so Luther tried to change that. Luther began to talk about the giver of gifts not as St. Nicholas, but as Christendom. Now, Christendom is a German word that means the Christ child. And so Luther began to shift the focus away from St. Nicholas to Christendom, which in English is translated as Kris Kringle. Kris Kringle, the one who represents the Christ child, who offers hope, and who literally and tangibly proclaims the gospel. Kris Kringle. And so when we're asked, who is Kris Kringle? To me, okay, the deeper truth and the deeper answer is Kris Kringle is you and me. We are the representatives of the Christ child in the world, are we not? Aren't we called to do that? If we believe in the Christmas story, if we believe this story, you know, this is what gives us life, right? And gives us hope. And so as we approach Christmas, what do? As Kris Kringle, as Christendom, as the Christ, as representatives of Christ in the world, we look for ways, all right? We look for ways in which we can be Christ's presence for other people, where we can declare by our actions that Christ is present, that they are loved by God. I mean, that's what St. Nicholas, that's how he started, okay? We've sort of gotten away from that. But that is, you know, we're to be about looking for the people who are grieving, the people who are hurting, the people who are in need, the people who don't have enough, and how we might bless them, to encourage them, support them, to show them that Christ came to give them hope and life and love and grace. See, to me, this is what Christmas is all about. To me, this is what the movie ultimately points us to. Because if we forget that, then Christmas is just another holiday of self-indulgence, right? Buying stuff for people who really don't need stuff, you know. That's all it becomes. But if we do remember this, then we're also going to not only getting gifts for our loved ones, for our family, but also we'll be about, you know what, looking for those who also are in need. Yeah. What have we done? Asking ourselves, what have we done for those who are poor, for those who are hungry, for those who are hurting, for those who are in need? You know, there's about 3 weeks until Christmas. And many of you, I'm sure, have already started on your Christmas shopping, and you're checking your list and doing all those kinds of things. And you're counting on the fact that Santa's going to show up on Christmas Day, right? But part of what we're charged to do is to make sure that Santa shows up on Christmas Day for other people as well. And I know some of you already done it. Here at St. Stephen, we have what's called the Alliance Center Tree. Alliance Center is centers here in the Charlotte area, that help to educate and help to bring hope and encouragement to children who are economically disadvantaged. And so we have stars on our trees, and therefore for gifts for those students. And you know, our trees are bare. All the stars have been spoken for, and so Santa's going to show up, all right, for those children. You know, we're collecting books for children. There's the Dunn Card Scholarship Fund that helps boys and girls further education. There's our Christmas Eve offering. If you know our tradition here at St. Stephen is we receive an offering on Christmas Eve or even before that, and that we give it all away. 100% of it we give away. And so this year, half of that's going to Eastway Middle School here in Charlotte. That is a middle school where almost 50% of the students are economically disadvantaged. It's a school that doesn't have a PTO or a PTA. It's a school that has lots of needs. And so we're trying to fill that gap. And so half of the offering will go to that. The other half will go to support some of the shelters, the Center of Hope here in Booth Commons, two local shelters that serve women and children and families and veterans. And so that's what we're doing in our community. If you're not part of our community, that's what I encourage you to do, to look around and say, all right, how can I represent Christ in some tangible kinds of ways? All right, to make sure that Santa shows up for them as well. See, Christmas isn't about Black Friday or Cyber Monday or everything else. It's looking at the world and seeing how you can make the love of Christ tangible for people who are in need. And so my invitation is simply this. Don't forget that there's a great deal of truth that you're never going to fully understand with your 3 pounds of grain or brain matter, okay? There's a deeper level. You can't always prove everything logically, rationally, scientifically. See, God is far bigger than our comprehension, far bigger than our universe. And Christmas points us to that, reminds us of that God has come into this world to show us love and grace and mercy, that he knows our name and he knows our story and he loves us in spite of us, right? And that if we will simply trust that, go to that deeper level and trust that, we'll find that our life overflows with hope. And I also want you to remember this, and that we're called to represent, to represent the Christ child. We're called to be Kris Kringle in the world. So my hope is that we will be looking for those opportunities to do so. Will you pray with me? And I'd like for you, I just invite you just to pray, just to maybe quietly whisper there under your breath, just simply these words. Lord, help me not to miss the real meaning of Christmas. Help me to be like St. Nicholas, Kris Kringle, to have a heart of compassion for people who are in need. Use me to be your hands, to be your feet, your heart of Christ in the world. Oh Lord, sometimes we get so stuck in our logical ways of thinking and we lose sight of where love and joy and hope, all the intangibles, is really found. Lord, sometimes we just forget to trust. So this Christmas, oh Lord, help us to go deeper and to trust you, to trust the Christmas story, to trust that your love for us was made known through this child, through Jesus Christ that you give to us, that was born in Bethlehem. And in response to that, oh Lord, use us to be your instruments to bring healing and joy and hope to a life, to a world that is broken. Make us be representatives of the Christ child this season. This we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.